The Ryan Tubridy Show on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sky Broadband. With our broadband, your world is limitless. Live beyond.
It's 9:24 and Elizabeth has been on to say thank you for the good news about flowers. My consultant told me I wasn't to lift anything and I said I had to change the water in the vase, vase, vase of flowers. And he said, you don't need a vase, vase, vase of flowers. So I've just texted him what you said. Yeah, you know, consultants aren't infallible, incidentally. I've met one or two along the way and occasionally they make mistakes. Now, it's rare, but certainly when it comes to things botanical, I'd say they haven't a notion. Okay, so you send that text and hold your head up high. I want to introduce to the studio Michael O'Regan, who is parliamentary correspondent with the Irish Times newspaper. Michael, what a pleasure to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much.
A lot of people will be familiar, Michael, with your voice on various programmes down through the years and indeed on television. But I suppose we do a potted history of who you are, where you're from and how you got to where you are in terms of your job and so forth. So give us a little bit of the... my name is...
I'm a native of County Kerry, Ryan. Yeah. You'd never have guessed. Grew up in rural Kerry, the Dingle Peninsula, 4 miles from Tralee on the road to Dingle, townland called Anna, not fiercely well known beyond Anna, but famous for a lot of reasons.
Yeah, of course.
This was the Dingle Peninsula, very rural at the time, very traditionally Catholic church in the GAA and Fianna Fáil, very, very dominant forces at that time. Went to school locally in a rural national school, literally, by the way, at the foot of a mountain.
Yes.
At the foot of the Sliabhmish Mountains, small rural national school, two teacher. Went to the CBS in Tralee, then went to what was then the School of Journalism in Rathmines.
Yes.
It was before...
DCU.
DCU and all that.
Sure.
The late, great Louis MacRedmond was director there. Marvellous
right.
man.
Right.
Lovely man. Then joined the Kerryman. I'd worked there for a number of years. Joined the Irish Times.
Yes.
In the newsroom.
So you made that was a climb down for you then.
Indeed. Sent him off to Dublin. He's no use to us down here.
So you accepted that demotion.
Exactly. Young fella get a job in Dublin. You know, you're doing no more work for us in this county.
Yeah.
You know? You've served your time.
You have.
Yeah. So I joined the Irish Times newsroom, hired by Conor O'Clery, later became a famous... Conor was then news editor.
Yes.
Later became a very, very famous foreign correspondent.
Right.
The great Douglas Gagey was editor at that particular time. Marvellous man. Brilliant editor. A great era in Irish journalism. Prent, of course, Ryan, at his height in those days. You had Prent and you had the national broadcaster, RTÉ, and that was it.
Yes.
And everybody doing well, you know?
Yeah.
So I worked in the newsroom for many years. Then later, working on politics, became parliamentary correspondent. And then I've worked as Irish Times parliamentary correspondent now for a number of years.
Looking at those politicians I've been up at that in the gallery where you watch the what you might call the Coliseum of Irish politics, the cauldron certainly, and all in action. Who do you think down through the years did you find very striking as a performer, as a person, as a politician? Who then those rare beacons that you go for better or worse, incidentally. That you go, they don't come along very often.
The person I found more striking is somebody who died, unfortunately, quite young. John Kelly, a Fine Gael TD, whom I encountered as a student, actually, and had been very, very helpful to me. You know, when I was a young fella, I interviewed him. He was then a young politician. Lovely man, delightful man. Very good to me as a student, you know.
Yeah. And an orator, wasn't he, really?
Brilliant orator. Yeah. He was an academic in UCD. He had been a minister. I interviewed him one time when he was, I think, Minister of Industry and Commerce. And I was sitting there with him, and he was very troubled about the state of the economy. Gadda Fitzgerald made a Minister of Industry and Commerce.
Yes.
And he was incredibly candid. He says to me, things are going to get worse. This was the early 80s. Things are going to get worse, Michael, he says, before they get better. I'm sorry, he says. I have no positive message. Now, this was unusual for a politician.
Yeah.
But also, he was a brilliant orator in the Dáil. He retired from politics and then, unfortunately, died young. There were others. I mean, Joe Higgins, of course, brilliant. I admired Tony Gregory hugely, actually.
Yes.
Dogged, committed. Idealistic, and then of course I cannot. But
you're going to say Haughey, aren't you?
Charles J. Haughey.
Yeah,
and I have to say this, Ryan.
Go on.
I retired from the Irish Times in November, and I qualify for my free
bus
travel
pass.
Yeah. Thanks to Charlie Haughey.
Amazing.
So when I'm at the 46A with my free pass on the Slorgan Road, you're in traffic, right?
Yes.
Looking at your watch, rushing into Arty, and I wave to you and say, Ryan, I have free travel.
You think of CJH, do you?
Yes.
Isn't it amazing that legacy for
that
Yes. Because when you saw what happened in Dublin Castle and the tribunals, and do you remember when he came out and he was always fancied himself as a bit of a Mitterrand emperor style, imperial style leader? And then I remember him coming out and the ignominy of people hissing.
Shouting at him. I was there that day, actually.
Threw coins at him.
Yes.
And thinking, God, what a reduced man. Because of, obviously, sins of the past, I suppose.
Yeah, the sins. I was there that day, actually, right? I was writing a piece about it. Yeah. And
amazing,
the late Mary
it?
Holland said to me afterwards, I remember, in the, she said, that was a tough piece you wrote about Charlie Haughey. Well, I said, look, I just had to write about what was there.
Yeah.
But I will say this for him. And there is a tendency among journalists, myself included, to elevate some people to sainthood and dismiss everything others have done because perhaps they might have had a rather checkered career, and that's putting it mildly. But if you look at his accomplishments, and they were formidable as a Minister for Justice, the Succession Act, if you look at the if you look at Temple Bar, the Financial Services Centre, what he did as a minister, for instance, when he was Minister of Finance.
So let me ask you about that briefly, because we've more to talk about.
Yes,
we didn't come here to talk about this, but you're always you always got great insight. That's why I'm tapping you for this, because if you think of the likes of, say, Tony Blair, and you think, look at the effort.
Yes.
And indeed, Bertie Ahern, the effort they put into the peace process. And you could say the same for Albert Reynolds and John Major and so on. And yet Tony Blair has got the bloodstain of Iraq. Bertie had his own troubles in Dublin Castle. We mentioned the others, but we'll get there in a second. How do we, as people who like history, students of history, how do we separate and how does history treat individuals who had that checkered history and decide they brought such goodness and yet there was trouble?
Yeah, I think that's the challenge for historians.
Isn't
it? It is, absolutely. The challenge for historians, put it in context. If you take, for instance, Bertie Ahern's achievement in the peace process, formidable. Now, Vincent Brown famously wrote about Bertie Ahern that he went around pretending he wasn't intelligent at all. He was a very, very skilled... I covered Bertie Ahern for years. I travelled the country with him. During general elections, very able, very bright.
Isn't that funny?
Very clever.
Yeah, I think it's funny that pretending not to be intelligent is an interesting line.
Oh, yeah,
because
Vincent got it right.
He did, and people have been saying the same for years about Boris Johnson. But actually, unlike Bertie in that respect, Johnson's been found out as actually not being all that bright, enough.
I would agree with you. Johnson isn't bright at all.
Not as much as we all thought.
No.
We thought he was hiding, but actually he was hiding nothing. He's emperor's new clothes.
Yes, what you see, unfortunately, is what you get. In all its awfulness, this bumptious chancellor who's become prime minister. Bertie went around saying he cultivated this, what would I know? I'm a simple dub. I go to Croke Park. I like a park.
How are the hard-working men?
How is the hard-working... number of times I saw Bertie punch somebody in the shoulder and say, how's the hard-working man? Now, his knowledge of people's work rate was phenomenal, given that every time he said, how's the hard-working man?
Right, Okay, but that's for another day. I want to ask you about you, because we crossed paths in the most unusual circumstances.
Indeed.
Not too long ago. And you've been writing about this because you've obviously decided that it's good to talk. What did you have? Was it a sore back or a lump on the leg?
Well, I had, unfortunately, Ryan, cancer is very prevalent in the extended family. Now, it's in every family, but it's very prevalent in the extended family, unfortunately. So I knew a bit about it. My mother died of cancer. I've had cousins battling with cancer. I know people don't like using the phrase battling, but I mean it in the best sense.
And you had a young, quite a young relation.
I had, Frank Fitzgibbon
very
from
fit
Kerry.
Man,
he was a marathon runner.
Yes.
He was 55 when he died. He ran marathons. And the day of his funeral in Kerry, on his coffin was a framed photograph of him running through the tape in his final marathon, waving to people.
Good Lord.
And I'd gone to see him at the matter and, and all that kind of thing. So I was aware of it. And a cousin of mine, Tommy O'Regan, who's a GP down in Kerry, who's seen the extended family trauma on this, he says, all things being equal, it's the luck of the draw, you know. But anyway, in my case, I had symptoms that were bouts of chronic fatigue. unnatural. I mean, not tiredness. This was fatigue beyond kind of taking in what was all about.
Debilitating.
Yeah. Utterly debilitating. And towards the end, I had chronic back pain. It was as if every bone in my back was in agony. I mean, it really was bad. I mentioned the Irish Times piece there that I was covering Monica Barnes' funeral, and I stood up. The pain was so bad. I stood up against the wall of the church, literally. I mean, people must say, your man has become a pillar of the church in his old age or something. But here I was literally up against the wall of the church.
Sure.
So that was there. But anyway, and I went on a walking holiday in Connemara, near you're very familiar with, and
yes.
I didn't meet the targets at all. They were modest targets, by the way. This wasn't climbing the Himalayas.
Yeah.
I was one day in the Aran Islands, I remember, golden, beautiful summer's day, and I had to sit on a wall to rest. It was a very modest walk. But anyway, what brought matters to a head was I woke early one morning, 6 a.m. I discovered a lump on my right leg. And I said, this is it. It's coming for me. It's here. This is very morbid, Ryan, but this
That's
is...
That's okay. This is what it's all about.
I felt I had the symptoms because of my knowledge of the illness, the sense of terror that it strikes in people. I looked at the lump and I said, this is it, it's here. Cancer is here. I'm its next victim. I went to my GP. He said, look, there's every chance this could be benign. I went for tests. No. They found a tumour on my right leg. I had the radiation, I had surgery, everything fine, grand, brilliant.
You thought you were in the clear.
I thought I was in the clear. I was home. Even for somebody weaned on Catholic guilt and repression. And that Ireland, Ryan.
That shouldn't indulge in any sort of excitement or hubris.
Precisely.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
And where pain and misery was meant to be the ultimate high. So here I am in a nursing home after my surgery, right, yes, and the radiation. I've done it. I've escaped, you see.
Yes.
So anyway, that was where I went home. I went for routine blood tests, rushed back into hospital. Kidneys had failed. I had other health problems. I was brought back into hospital. Battery of tests. And eventually a blood sample was sent to France and they discovered a second cancer, multiple myeloma. Now, this was is a blood cancer. So this is my second cancer. And I mean, and of course, typically, I said to myself, come on. I mean, look, God. I was prepared to take one.
We all
have to take a hit.
Yeah.
But this is round two.
Yes.
Of this most awful, frightening illness, which earlier on, of course, I couldn't even talk about.
So the second bout was a much more serious affair.
Yeah. And mind you, now, in all cases, Ryan, I was told, look, this is treatable.
Okay.
You know? So I had gone through the radiation, the lovely, marvellous radiotherapists in the cancer hospital in Rutgar, brilliant people. Marvellous people to deal with. And then the surgery, marvellous people again to deal with. And then I was told, okay, you have to go on chemotherapy. I was on dialysis, which I remain on dialysis for the kidneys. I had to go through chemotherapy for the blood cancer. The chemotherapy wasn't as harsh on me as it is on others. It was an injection into my tummy. A lot of people have a very, very rough time, as you know, with chemotherapy.
Yes.
But there were days when I had both dialysis and chemotherapy, I was half dead. I remember going home one day, half dead, and I was lying on the couch, and I was trying to watch a black and white film from about 1946 or something. I think my great
Humphrey
favorite
Bogart.
Humphrey Bogart,
yeah,
Mike,
yeah,
was on.
Yeah, yeah.
You see, and I was falling asleep and nodding off, and I was saying to again, railing against the bad luck of a second bout of cancer. And then I got a text from a friend of mine about somebody who had passed away, younger than me, apparently much healthier than me in many ways, you know. And then I said, come on, you know, everything is relative.
You described being in various hospital corridors, seeing a child unwell, a mother in almost pre-mourning, and you thinking, better put a bit of context
on this.
That's
it, that's it. There's
your age, your life experience, all the things.
Exactly.
You become quite existential and reflective.
That's it. There's no room at all for self-pity for somebody like me. I've had a pretty privileged life by any standards. And decades of very healthy life. Mm.
But I admire, I think there's something quite, there's an honesty to even the expression railing against the injustice of the cancer. It's quite refreshing rather than saying, you know, I was stoically accepting what I had on my plate, which I think is the opposite of what I would do. I'd be more inclined to do what you did, which is to go, why? And then you'd be falling asleep and trying to watch the, you know, the Maltese Falcon and not getting through
the
end of it. Yeah, exactly. Start again, rewind, start again. Yeah, yeah. So at what point do you get to a point of acceptance, Michael, or do you...
You do actually, right? Mm. I was having a coffee with Michael Coman, the chaplain in Luke's and Rutgar one day. I know him from years back.
Sure.
And he was saying that about he saw people with a sense of acceptance. Sometimes your energy levels are so low and your mood is so bad that there is acceptance. But the other thing is this, that when you do walk down the corridor, and this etched in all my experiences, this is the most awful. Walking down the corridor of the cancer hospital one day, feeling sorry for myself, and I see this young boy of about 10, and he's in very, very bad state, a young child. And I said to myself, come on, get out of it. Another day, I'm waiting for radiation, and two young women, very young women, are sitting next to me, one of them the mother of very young children, and they're talking about their chances of living, surviving. Young women, way younger than me, I would say perhaps in their 30s.
Yeah.
So everything is relative, you know? So it's when you see others in a much worse state. But you do get into a level of acceptance. You have terrible days of unending pain. I don't mean I don't have physical pain anymore. I'm very lucky. I had terrible pain at one stage.
But tell me about the F. Scott Fitzgerald quote, which really resonated with me in your article about that awful time in the morning, night, that twilight, if you like.
That's right. I went through periods of insomnia for a while.
Mm.
And for some astonishing reason, I seemed to wake at 3 a.m.
Almost like a clock.
Yes, like a clock, as if an alarm clock went off.
Yes, yes.
And I would go in the hospital, I would go to sleep, you know, I'd drift off. And then around 3 a.m. I would wake. And I would look at my watch instinctively. It always seemed to be 3 a.m. And flashing before me was F. Scott Fitzgerald, that chilling observation, in the real dark night of the soul, it's always 3 o'clock in the morning.
That really stuck with me, that.
And always 3 a.m.
Yeah. It's extraordinary.
For some reason, never 40.
Did you think you were going to die of cancer, or did you think that you were always going to come out the other end?
I always felt, for some reason, and this is coming from somebody with a rather morbid outlook on things from time to time, unfortunately. I always felt, I was going to survive. Don't ask me why, Ryan. I remember one day I asked the most stupid question you could ask of a consultant, all the consultants. And if any of them listening, I want to thank them all.
For their patience.
For their patience.
Excuse the pun,
I've been a bad patient at times, Ryan. I've been cranky. I've taken this badly. I'd love to come in here this morning and say, Ryan, this is a story of heroism and really courage in the face. It's not.
Yeah.
The heroes are Vicky Phelan and people like that. This is an aged Kerry man who's taken his illness badly. But I did say to a consultant, well, I'll never forget the stupidity of the question, very early on. I said, could I die from this, you see? And he looked at me and he said, oh, gee, this Kerry man, what am I going to do? He looked at me and said, well, you could, but... What he meant was, you could die from a bad head cold if you don't treat it, you know. But he said to me, this is eminently treatable, he says.
Okay.
But if you don't get treatment, obviously, you will die eventually from untreated
cancer. A very prosaic analysis of your
illness. Indeed.
Tom, I've never laughed so much during a cancer interview. But you obviously, that disposition has got you through. That I always talk about finding comedy in the dark corners, and you clearly had to do that. To emerge out the other side, which brings us to where you're at now.
Yeah.
And I see you have a crutch today, so I don't know what, maybe you should explain that to me. And what,
I still use a crutch as a, I get by without it sometimes, but I bring it sometimes just to help me get around, because there are days when the energy levels are so good. Do you know what the best days are, Ryan? The best days are the day you don't have treatment and your energy levels have improved and you can make your way. Yesterday, for instance, I had lunch with my great friend John O'Hanlon, and by just on a whim, we took a spin up the Dublin Mountains.
Yeah.
We went to see, actually, for the first time ever, the memorial to the great Nola Mass up in the Dublin Mountains.
Oh, yes, my father used to take us there.
Yes, indeed. And your grandfather was an associate of his.
Go on, sorry. Yeah.
But anyway, up the Dublin Mountains, I'd never seen Nola Mass's memorial, you know, and all that kind of thing. And That kind of a day is a great day because you don't have treatment. So, and I'm reminded actually of, there's a great quote from John McGarren, which I came by recently.
I'd love to hear it.
And which it took me a bout of ill health to appreciate. And he was asked one time about, you know, his glittering literary career, nominated for the Booker and all that kind of thing. And he said, he summed it up like this. He says, the best of life is lived quietly, where nothing happens but our calm journey through the day. And I've had great support from people, from my employer, the Irish Times, from people like yourself who came to see me in hospital, from my daughter, Deirdre, my granddaughter, Luna, was born in the middle of it all in last July, from family, friends, everybody. And I'd like to thank everybody. So I've had marvellous support, brilliant support. But at the end of the day, with serious illness, you have to reach into your own person, your own resources. And sometimes the resources are there within you. Sometimes they're not.
And what if they're not? So in other words, you don't want to lean on people, or you can't. And what happens when you can't, or when you can't lean on yourself, if you like? And in other words, the well inside is dry. What do you do then? Is that when you make the phone call to say, I need to talk? Or
You can do that, or else you can sit it out, knowing that it will pass. I mean, there are depressions. For instance, one of the things available out of cancer care, I didn't know this until I developed cancer myself, there's a psychological service. I availed of it, psychological service available to people. You can go and see a psychologist.
Is that useful to you?
Hugely useful. I did it, hugely useful. And she prepared me for the inevitable depressions, the bad days. But if you... What I've done is I've sat them out, literally in some cases.
Sure.
You know, maybe watching the Maltese Falcon
again,
or whatever, again. Humphrey Bogart pulling in a cigarette or whatever. And you sit them out on the basis that you know this will pass.
Yeah.
It will pass. And then, of course, there's the unreal euphoria. The day I could take a shower on my own without assistance. The day I could tie my shoelaces. Yeah. The day I first experienced rain on my face, leaving the hospital where you visited me, Ryan, I was on my way to the acute hospital one morning, and I was coming out, and David and Jerry, those brilliant, marvellous men who drove me up and down to the acute hospital. David was a great pal of mine.
Yeah.
And I felt rain in my face. And because I'd been indoors so long, of course, and in hospital, the beauty of rain in my face.
Irish rain. Yeah, the proper stuff. Yeah.
It's
extraordinary.
Incredible.
You know, it is extraordinary that you live this life, it's raining, I need an umbrella or coat or whatever, as opposed to it's raining and I can feel every drop falling down my cheeks and it's delicious.
It's delicious. And you look at trees, for instance, you look at nature.
Yeah, I bet.
Sunshine. Mm. I mean, this is marvellous.
It's like George Bailey and It's a Wonderful Life, running up the street. James Stewart, run up the street. I want to live again.
You know,
it's like getting another go.
That's it. I remember my first day hobbling or trying to walk in Marley Park, for instance, which I live very near Marley Park in South Dublin. And the beauty of the park, always evident in the past, because I used to walk there quite a bit. The beauty of the park, I mean, trees, nature, birds singing.
The beautiful things. Yeah,
beautiful things.
Look, there's so much a great response. You've had a lot of admirers in listening in this morning, including our own Flora McCarthy, who's great. She says, "Wonderful to hear Michael back on air. Still our all-time favourite guest on Oireachtas TV." So that's nice of her to do that. Good morning, Flowers and Michael. Michael Regan. No better start to the day. What a glorious voice, and sits in such a soothing spot in the ear. People do like your voice, no doubt about it. Michael MacArthur. Michael McCarthy, former TD and the Corkman, was on. Pleasure to hear the distinguished tones of Michael O'Regan back on the airwaves. As a parliamentary journalist, his professional prowess touched all of us in the bubble of Leinster House, wishing him a speedy return to full health. Well said. And another, my mother, Ellen Higgins, from Lispole, who's Joe's mam, loved listening to Michael's Dáil Report on Radio Kerry every week. Good wishes to him on his recovery upwards and onwards. Another from Mary, so happy to hear Michael O'Regan's gorgeous voice back on the radio. I've long admired him and his work in the Times. I wish him good health in his retirement and he will be missed. What a lovely, positive interview, says Sarah in Galway. Needed to hear this today. Such honesty. Love to Michael, and what a fabulous Kerry accent. Lovely interview, says another. Makes me appreciate all the simple things we do in life, as your guest said, like a gorgeous cycle with my husband yesterday, cycling in silence along the country roads. No talk. talk, just being together and enjoying the sun and the wind. I'm here in Tralee, says Margaret Glazier, who's a farmer in Tralee, listening to you and Michael. And I'm a neighbour who grew up near Michael and his family. Wonderful memories of innocent days. Michael was a devout altar boy. Oh, that's far behind him now. Wishing him only the very best. Such a beautiful, clear diction mixed with a soft Kerry lilt. Could listen to him all day, and what wonderful storytelling ability with great candour and humour. A tonic for a Monday morning.
There was no more devout an altar boy, right?
I can well believe it.
Do you not see the remnants of the halo?
There's a little glow there above your head. So what are you going to get up to now that you've retired formally from the paper? Will you still be contributing? And
well, I hope to do some journalism. I do a weekly review of the politics on Radio Kerry on Friday mornings. I'm back on that.
Good.
So I will be doing some journalism. Oh yeah,
life goes on.
Life goes on.
Michael precisely. Was the first person I followed on Twitter. How about that? Wish him all the best. Great man from Betty in Offaly. It's so good to see in such rude health.
Thanks, Ryan.
And I've enjoyed our chat this morning. You're one of the good guys. And
thank you
for
the book, by the way.
Yeah, you did that all right for you.
It did get me away from Brexit.
it was the kind of Trumpy one, wasn't it?
It was marvelous.
About history and the president.
Oh, yeah, and really caught the Trump White House.
It was interesting. I'm glad you liked it. Michael, it's great to see you. Michael O'Regan, parliamentary correspondent, once upon a time with the Irish Times and currently a friend of ours and working with Radio Kerry. And always great to see you. And thanks for coming in to see us this morning.
Thanks,
it's 10 to 10.
Thanks, Ryan. Was that okay?